Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Panoramic Outdoors Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Today's episode, we have on a good buddy of ours, Chris Stanky. If you don't know Chris, he's a Manitoba local, and he's an accomplished competition archery shooter who's competed and been successful at a national level, and all around great outdoorsman. He's kind of taken a break for a bit out of the archery world and the not sort of a break, but slowed down in the hunting realm. And now he's kind of getting back into it. So listen in and kind of see what he's doing differently these days than what he used to be doing. Another couple things I want to talk to you before we get the show going here. We have a few exciting things coming up here this spring. First and foremost, well, I guess not the first and foremost, but the Parkland Outdoor Show in Yorkton, Saskatchewan. We're going to be there April 4th and 5th. So come check that out. You can buy your tickets at the parklandoutdoorshow.com. And yeah, it's going to be a great event. Really looking forward to it. Just going to be a phenomenal event. So can't wait for that. February 23rd, put this in your calendars. We're hitting the ice on Lake Winnipeg. We're going to be doing some podcasting out there. And hopefully it's not minus a million, but and hopefully the fish are biting. But join us for a day out on the ice, Lake Winnipeg. We're going to have a couple special guests out there. We're going to be doing some cooking, some podcasting, and hopefully some fish catching. So come check us out. Stay tuned and follow along with that on our Instagram and Facebook. If you're wondering where can we find out more info about that, that's where you're going to find it. And I want to thank, or we want to thank, Skeller Up Quattro Boots. So they're these amazing, amazing, warm and comfortable and durable boots that we've been using. We've been using them on the ice. They got hunting boots. They're good for the farm. Pretty much anything you're looking for. They're rated, I think, to minus 50 or 60. You can find them at ecogenics.com in Canada. And yeah, make sure you get in there and get a pair. They're probably the most comfiest boot I've ever worn in my life. So check them out. And last but not least, cannot forget about Make It Mustard. Amazing, amazing gourmet mustard that you make yourself. Order it online, makeitmustard.com. It'll get shipped to you. There's various flavors to choose from, and this is amazing stuff. So step up your game with your meals with this Make It Mustard gourmet mustard, and I guarantee you everyone will love it. Everybody, enjoy the podcast.
Okay, let's do it. Chris Stanky in the studio.
Welcome, man.
AKA the basement.
I thought I was like, I came down here and it looked like the casting coach in the corner. So.
It's early.
Yeah, finally welcome, made it man. Out. You know, been invited a few times, but it was last minute, and with young ones and family and a company to run, I wasn't able to sneak away, but managed to get away tonight. So here I am.
Yeah, finally, man. It's been a couple. You know what? Yeah, it's been weird, and we've wanted to have you out a couple different times, and then but it's always just been like, we had the deer hunting podcast plan, and then we're like, oh man,
no show, by the way.
We should have Chris down for it. Well, and then it was a last minute invite. Yeah, a last minute invite. And you're like, give me a heads up next time, maybe.
In the middle of cooking supper.
Yeah.
But it's funny, I Chase has been talking about like hunting with you and stuff this fall, and I was like, oh, who's this guy, blah, 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 and started talking. And I've met you a few times up in Churchill too, so there's some more connections, small world kind of idea, so that's pretty neat.
Yeah, man, 6 degrees of separation. Well, Manitoba, right?
You know my wife better than, like, I mean, we've met before, but you know Lindsay well.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know Lindsay well?
I think so. Like, yeah, from work and stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say well, but like on a working thing, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're gonna do what we normally do with people that we have on the show. We're gonna do some like rapid fire questions. I think Chase is gonna start it out quick.
Yep.
And I'm gonna follow up. We're gonna go back and forth. But yeah, let's do this.
Okay. Favorite bow. If you had one bow to buy, your last bow, or the last bow you could purchase, no price limit. What bow would it be?
So had I had this question, you know, 5 years ago, I would have said Bowtech because I was a diehard Bowtech fan. I had more than a few of them. The last, and I just purchased a new bow this past season, which,
did you win nationals with your Bowtech?
Yeah, Bowtech Allegiance, an 08, and I haven't bought one since then. So, that's saying a lot. So, I bought a new PSE, a PSE Voke 35, and it's phenomenal. It shoots great, and it's really got me, giving me the itch to get back into competition and hunting again. I mean, I ended up shooting two deer with it. I shot my buck, and I guess I shot that last one, right? So, yeah. So I ended up getting two deer with that bow too. So it's kind of got that one finished up quick. So, if I had to, yeah, I'd stick with what I know now. Yeah. There's a lot out there that I'd love to shoot. I find it a little heavy. So I'd love to try some of those carbon bows out. But right now, I mean, what I'm shooting, you got to be confident with what you have. So that's why I'm going to stick with that.
I'm going to just do a follow-up question on that as well. We've talked about it before in the podcast, and I think you've got enough experience and stuff like that to maybe pick your brain on it. But if you were like a new bow hunter, what would be like the one thing that you'd look for? Maybe other than like, does it feel good? Like, is there something that you would look for in a bow when you pick up different brands?
Brace height right off the hop.
Okay.
Like, so your brace height's the measurement from the riser to the string. So like essentially it's a shorter brace height means that the arrow will be in contact with the string longer in your draw and in your draw cycle. So when you release it, so it's more prone to, if you torque your bow or if you move your arm or whatever, chances of it's harder to shoot a shorter brace height bow than it is a longer brace height. So like right off the hop, if you're a beginner archer, I wouldn't go pick up the 5-inch brace height bow because it's really fast. I would pick up something around that 7-inch brace height that is a lot more forgiving.
Right.
That would be the one thing, out of anything that I would probably pick. Because, if you pick something with a short brace height, you would probably get frustrated if you're a new archer and you just can't shoot it properly.
So you got to find something that's a little more forgiving so you can really work on your form. Yeah, your form and your.
My question?
Yeah,
question. Well, I just had a follow-up question.
Yeah.
I'll go again. I'll go
twice. You're going to do double.
So you have one last meal. It's a two-part question. One last meal, so you can have it with anybody you want, famous, here, there, alive, dead, whatever. And what is on the menu? So, number one, who would you have supper with?
Johnny Cash.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, we listen to that.
Like Joaquin Phoenix or the actual Johnny
Cash? Yeah, actual. We listen to him all the time at home. He's one of my, on the job sites and stuff. We got him playing all the time. That would be, and just listening to his life story, he'd be a very interesting person to talk absolutely. To about what his life experience would be something else.
And what are you guys, what's on the menu? What's the meal that you guys order?
Oh, it'd have to be steak.
What kind of steak? Beef? Elk? Moose?
Caribou? I'm going to go elk.
Good choice.
I'm going to go elk steak. Nice. Yeah.
What's your favorite Johnny Cash song?
Oh, there's so many. Now you put me on the spot. Wow.
Girl named Sue?
Let's go back to that
Girl named Sue.
Let's go back to that one. Let me think about that for a bit.
Okay. No problem. Okay. My second question. Favorite, if I can get my lips to work.
Oh, it was a boy named Sue.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Three beer deep. I thought you said that for a joke.
It would have been good. Just edit that out.
It's a good song, though.
What's your favorite big game animal to pursue?
Wow. I'm going to say moose. You know what? It's a trip that... Because whitetail, Chase has touched base on it. in other podcasts about you know, where I hunt archery whitetail and how good it is. So I find that not that it's not challenging, I just find that it's just, you know, you go there and you know the deer are there, and it's just a matter of sitting and you know, I don't think I had a single time this year that I didn't see deer. So I mean, it kind of takes that surprise away a little bit. So I'm gonna say moose hunting, because that's something that I've been doing since I was, you know, 18 years old, back when we were hunting late season up by Bessette, where we pulled the moose camp up there, and it was a big family thing. Like, my uncles went in one camp and we went in another one, and then now it's, you know, progressed to hunting early season with my father-in-law, and we go every single year. It's our 1 week trip. We fly in, we do our hunt, and it's just something I look forward to. So that's probably, we just have a good time. I mean, whether you get one or not, I think it's just the weather's nice, and you go out and enjoy yourself. So,
and there's that, yeah, so there's a destination factor and a bit of that unknown factor of the hunt, like you said.
It's funny, because like this year I went on that, like it was kind of a short trip, like five day trip with my buddy Hack, and we're sitting in the blind one day and we're just like talking, kind of like, man, you know how sweet it would be if moose hunting was like deer hunting, where you like would actually see something. Like, you sit and hunt moose and hunt moose and hunt moose, and you don't see something for days until it like actually happens. But can you imagine if it was like deer hunting and you could see like a whole bunch of cows and calves, and then all of a sudden this bull walks out?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, man, that'd be unbelievable. Well, but anyways.
Yeah. And that's like this year, when we were hunting moose, we were getting so discouraged. The weather was, I mean, other than the 2 days, like there was a day, like kind of an afternoon and then a full day that the weather was crap. I mean, woke up to like 6 inches of snow, but other than that, though, the weather was great. Yeah. There was no wind. It was, you know, you couldn't have asked for a better week, because you're always going to have that couple days when you go for a week, you're going to write off a couple, but you couldn't have asked for a better week of moose hunting. But like, come towards the end there, we were getting a little discouraged, and we were contemplating going, you know, wow, we're going to go somewhere else next year. We're going to fly in somewhere else, cause this spot, whatever. And then, you know, lo and behold, like the morning we had thought, I'm kind of going down a rabbit hole with this story, but whatever, we'll keep going. We thought we were going to go hunt, you know, downstream, go down the rapids, go to a new area just to hunt. But I, you know, the whatever, we stayed up late and I just wasn't feeling it. So the next morning I said, take me across the river. I'm going to go to another spot. Well, you know, 35 minutes later, there's a bull walks out 80 yards, stands there, and, you know, you whack him. And then when I was walking, you know, when I went walked to go see him, I spooked another moose. And then I walked down the edge of the river. I saw a cow and a calf, and then saw another bull. Like, how do you go from not seeing moose for 5 days to all of a sudden you see four? And it's like, it's
crazy, but that's how that happens.
That's exactly it. I mean, the country you hunt moose in, I mean, they could be, you know, 50 yards from you. And, you know, if they walk off or just stand there and you walk away, you never see them. So moose hunting for sure would be the hunt I'd do.
Nice. Do you guys catch fish there? You guys fish at all there?
The fishing isn't, we have, like, this year Brian fished a little more than I do, because where I hunt, Brian kind of takes me across the river from the camp, and, you know, I have a tree stand or whatever I hunt, and then he kind of heads up river on with the boat, so he fishes a little more than I do.
Yeah.
So he was catching some like 5-pound catfish. Like, he wasn't, oh, we really? Were catching nice. Walleye yeah, and yeah. stuff. Like, it was more, which I find weird, like, we're a ways up on that river, and I just, yeah, there's, we never really spent any time fishing really. So I find like some of the lakes we've hunted on in the past have been a lot better.
Yeah.
But the rivers, I find, just, they don't produce like the lakes do.
I find a lot of times too, is like when we go moose hunting, we always say, oh yeah, we'll just like fish, and, well, you know, when it never happens. Like, you bring your fishing rod, you might throw it in the water, like throw a hook in the water, like maybe one afternoon, but like, It's you always say, oh yeah, let's go fishing. But then there's an old saying that I've heard from guys, it's that if you're in a good fishing spot, you're not in a good moose hunting spot, because if people know, you know what I mean? Like, if it's a good fishing spot, people know about it, so there's no moose around anyways.
But. Well, and the other thing too, with where we go moose hunting, like, we're not flying into a cabin or a lodge or nothing. Like, we're flying into a lake, like a river that's in the middle of nowhere. We fly in our, like, we have a prospector's tent. Like, we fly everything in, so when we, you know, our off time in between, say, the morning or evening hunts or whatever it is, like, we're cutting wood or we're making the camp better, you know, whether it's, you know, making the, where we cook a little more, you know, you're always improving something, right?
Yeah.
Because the first couple of times you just whip it up quick so you can get hunting, and then you kind of, and every year you go, like this year we had a couple of trees fall down. Well, then our A-frame, we had to fix our A-frame. So we kind of fix that up. So Yeah.
And there's one thing to say, and maybe it's just like my feeling, but when it comes to like moose hunting, the one thing that I really love about it is like, it's kind of like a sense of survival, especially when you do stuff like you're talking about, when you gotta, you know, you have nothing to go to. So, you know, you're very careful on what you do. You're kind of getting prepared for the worst, like you said, like cutting wood or doing this and doing that and making sure that you're comfortable. But there's like that sense of survival that I enjoy and I like crave it. So when I go moose hunting, it's just like, I don't know, there's just something there that's way different from like going waterfowl or deer hunting or something. But
absolutely. I mean, like the moose that we shot this year, as a crow flies from where the camp was to where I shot that moose was like 600 yards, but it still took us 7 hours.
Right.
Because we had to drag the boat up this little creek and then like do it in a couple loads to get it back to the river. And then once we got to the river, call it like go, like it was just, and I mean, I go hunting with my 65-year-old father-in-law. So
yeah,
I mean, he didn't complain once, but when we got home and yeah, he was,
well, 65 or 35, anyone's gonna hurt after getting a bull moose out of the bush.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Swamp. I see you showed me pictures of where you shot that moose. You guys were in the swamp, man. Oh, yeah. I was in the bush.
I mean, like, we had to drag this boat in and then like drag the boat up over this big beaver dam into a beaver flood and then like paddle it to this island because the moose died on this island. Like, it was and I'm glad it did, because like, could you imagine if that thing died in the pond? Like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, he told me that I'm not allowed to hunt in that spot anymore unless it's like the second last day from now on, he told me. So
yeah,
you guys got one of those little gas powered winches.
we bring a block
or helicopter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. So
last rapid fire question is on me, or do you got another one after me?
I got one more after you.
I actually don't have any more written down except for the classic one we've asked everyone. But if you had one last concert, who would you go and watch?
Rush. Just because I was literally thinking about this in the car today when I was, not in the car, when I was on my phone looking. and I saw that the drummer passed away today. So I was thinking, I'm like, man, like that's a concert I wish I would have went to.
Yeah.
And, you know.
So. Tribute to Rush.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay, last one. Favorite broadhead to shoot?
Oh. You know what? Again, we're gonna go full revolution here. Had you asked me that at the beginning of deer season, I would have told you Rage for sure. And not that they're not good, but because I shot all my deer this year with them, and they died fast. But the way I hit them, and the distance I shot them at, and the speed of the bow, I would have assumed that they would have been pass-throughs. And the only one out of the three I shot were pass-throughs. And really? So I felt that was, and again, not that, I mean, they all went, you know, died within 15 to 30 yards. So, I mean, the broadhead did their job, but I would have, you know, I don't know if I'd feel comfortable shooting that at a bigger animal than a whitetail, right? Or yeah, had that shot been 40 yards or, cause I mean, everything I shot this year was within 25. So had that shot been like 40 or 50, would that, you know, I think, I mean, it's a big broadhead, so if you don't hit bone, I mean, your margin for error is, you know, I think it does enough damage that if you're a little off, is fine. But now, if you ever hit a shoulder or hit something, there's no way that's going to get there. So, I don't know. I think this year I'm going to spend some time, and that's going to be one of the things I'm going to
do a little research.
Do a little research and yeah, maybe shoot a deer or two this year with something else, and maybe make a come back around, and we'll talk about it next year. And I'll tell you that I wish I never changed.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of those exactly. Things, right?
Yeah.
Because when it comes to archery, I think you guys can. I mean, you guys are all archery hunters. I think you guys can agree that when it comes to archery, you have to have 100% confidence with what you're going into the bush with. Because there's so many variables when it comes to archery hunting that you can't be, you know, have doubt in your equipment or your ability, you know?
That's the biggest thing, big time.
So you probably noticed that there's a few questions about archery in these rapid fires. Why is there so many questions about archery in these rapid fire questions there, Chris? Are you, you got some history with the archery department or what?
I used to compete and shoot in 3Ds and competitive archery for many years in the past when I was younger, and I, you know, worked a 9-to-5 Monday to Friday job where I had a lot more time on my hands and no family and kids. But, so yeah, I mean, Won countless provincial tournaments in my the class I used to shoot in, and nice. Went to nationals quite a few times, and done fairly well in that respect as well. So this year I'm going to get back into it now that my son's a little older in that. So I'm going to try to shoot every 3D tournament in the province this year.
All right on. So like, since you've got some history with that, do you find that it's bigger now, or was it bigger then? Kind of idea.
I think it was bigger then. I mean, I remember going to shoots around this area. There was, you know, Selkirk used to hold a 3D shoot, which I still think they do. But I find nowadays, like, you look online, you look at the 3D shoots, and, like, you know, back when, oh, I mean, back, you know, when I was early 20s, so I'll say whatever. I don't want to
date myself. Don't age yourself. Like, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah. Every weekend, like every Sunday, you can go shoot a tournament somewhere, whether, you know, all over the place, there was a tournament every Sunday. And like back when I first started seeing Lindsay, that's what we used to do. We used to pack the tent up and go and shoot tournaments. And now I think it's like every other weekend. So I think the numbers have definitely, and it's a lot more popular out west, like Western Manitoba. Like a lot of the tournaments now are like Western Manitoba.
You know? Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We had Hack on there. I guess that was last year now, and he talked a bit about the 3D tournaments and the formats and stuff like that, and it seems very interesting. I've never done one, obviously seen lots of pictures on Instagram, Facebook, etc. But I think it's growing to the point where like for instance, like a guy like myself, I'm interested in going to try one out, you know what I mean? And just the way like people talk about them, it's not necessarily like a huge competition. Like no one's gonna look at you if you blow the target up. You know what I mean? Like miss it. Like everyone's just there to have fun. No. And it's just like, let's get out and shoot some arrows, etc. So yeah, I'm looking forward to maybe this year getting to a few. But yeah, I think the western part of the province does have lots. Like Hack was saying, there's quite a few.
I'll be dragging you guys out to a couple.
Yeah.
Chase and I were already talking about it.
Yeah, so. You're trying to drag me out to a couple already, and I wish I could have went, man. And I wanna get to like more 3D shoots, and I've never done like a competition, but I've done a few just like outdoor 3D shoots, and they're a blast.
Oh, I think you guys will be hooked. Like I know there's an indoor one coming up on the 26th. It's a Sunday, a couple weekends from now. It's at 17 Wing at the Air Force Base that's coming up.
Right.
So I'm gonna go shoot that one.
Yeah, I think Jeff Martin was talking to me about that one.
Oh yeah.
So he's been kind of, come on out, man. So
right on.
Yeah,
we'll go to a couple. We'll have to pick and choose a couple. We'll have to look at the calendar, and we'll have to get together and
figure out a couple,
maybe camp for the weekend or something. Or
yeah. So yeah. If you're coming out west, you know, look me up. I'll hook you up with some places to stay. We don't have any of those couches you were talking about earlier, but safe place.
Is that is the Brandon one the biggest 3D shoot of the year? Is there some other like really big events?
Well, like the biggest one of the year would definitely be provincials, right? So depending right. on, and I mean that rotates around depending on who wants to host it. But the big indoor 3D shoot that, you know, is definitely Brandon's. That one's a big one. And then as for outdoor, I mean, like I said, I've been out of it, so I don't even know who hosts them anymore. I remember Dauphin used to be a really big one, and they used to have that one at like where the Country Fest grounds were.
Oh yeah.
So it was a really neat shoot because you had a lot of those you had a lot of elevation shots, right? Like where you're shooting down on like a pretty crazy angle, like down on an animal and stuff. So that was a really fun shoot. But other than that, like I know Sanford used to host a bunch, but I don't think they do that anymore. So those were pretty big because they were close to Winnipeg.
Yeah. This summer here when we did that meetup with Josh here and we went out to the archery range with Hack, they got a pretty good setup like down by the river, and they got kind of some of those elevation shots and stuff. So those outdoor shoots, I think, are the ones that I would like to go to. Like,
yeah.
I think it should be fun.
Nepo, like, I used to.
When it's minus Nepo fucking 30 yeah. out, like it is today.
Yeah, that's where we were in Nepo there.
Yeah, so Nepo, that shoots a lot of fun. I remember we used to. Yeah, that was a really good one.
I'd like to do something there with Josh again, and like we were talking about getting some people out there and do a shoot rendezvous. At the range. Yeah, do a bit of a rendezvous.
It's going to happen, man.
I like it. Let's make that happen.
So, yeah. So we got those five burning questions that we decided to make last like half an hour again, but it's always good to kind of get the guest into his comfortable zone and air some questions. But I guess what we're here to talk about is hunting. It's a hunting podcast episode, isn't it?
Hunting, archery. Whatever you want to make it, yeah.
So do you have any, like, good hunts that you can, like, tell us about one of your good hunts that you had this fall? I know you've been on quite a few, and mostly archery, lots of archery hunting.
Man, you had a good fall, I'm going to say that.
Like, exactly. If you guys don't follow this guy on Instagram, look him up, because he's got some pretty good stuff on
there. You can find lots of his stuff on our Instagram, too, so.
But, like, what's your epic hunt of the fall? Like, what's your number one?
Oh, man. Well, it has to be whitetail, man. Like, cause I mean, I brought Chase and that in. I remember he called me out of the blue, like texted me, "Oh, hey, what's going on?" You know, it was just kind of right at the beginning of the archery season, I think. And
that sounds like a booty call.
It felt like it. Then we started talking archery, and I'm like, "Hey, man, because he's like, "Oh, I got some time now, and I'm around." And I said, "Well, hey, man, like, I got a pile of land. Like, do you want to jump on board?" And he's like, "Yeah, when are we going?"
I remember when we were hanging out in Churchill, and you're like, "Dude, if you ever want to come archery hunting, let me know. I got some spots." So I was like, "All right, we'll see if this bar talks.
You're lucky you remember that one.
Or if this is going to be truth."
And was it?
Oh, man, you got some spots.
Yeah, and I haven't even showed you the really good ones yet. Got to keep a couple in the back pocket.
You got to keep the A spots.
Yeah, I mean, this archery season was just like a pile of like disappointment the first couple of days, but I was kind of happy that happened, because like the first sit, I mean, the deer that we saw on trail cams, I mean, they were coming out like perfectly, just scripted, you know. And I remember texting Chase, I'm like, "Dude, they're across the field, like they're coming my way, like in your," and then something spooked them, and then they ran and didn't, like, it's like they know, you know. And then they stopped behind the stand at like 40 yards behind all this brush where I couldn't even lace an arrow through, and I'm just sitting there staring at these like bucks, and I'm just like, "Oh." So I mean, I was disappointed, but like I got home and I even told my wife, I'm like, "You know what, I'm kind of happy it didn't happen, because like I would have felt it was too easy, too, you know, easy, you need that struggle,
yeah,
you know." And then, you know, fast forward, I mean, we went and, you know, I passed on a pile and that, and then I decided it came where I was starting to get busier, so I ended up just going behind my house, which I'm fortunate enough to have the archery only area right, you know, right in my backyard, and I have permission on land. Literally, I mean, I can walk to my tree stand from my back, from my back deck.
Yeah.
So we set some stuff up back there because I was getting busy and I knew I wouldn't have a whole lot of time. So I wanted something close to home that I could, if, you know, if I had an evening, I could sneak out. So set that up, and the trail cam picks started coming in. There was a couple decent. I mean, not as big as what we had on some of my other fields, but definitely some great animals and
good mature bucks.
You know, must have been the third sit. I took my son out for a couple. He's four, and he's just...
That's awesome about that spot, man, that you can get Taven out there.
Oh, man. He loves sitting in the ground blind, and I mean, he pushes me to go hunting more than I think I'm pushing. I want to bring him. I mean, like, you know, a couple evenings there, he's like, "Hey, we're going to go sit. We're going to go sit." And I'm like, it's kind of late. But I'm like, "Nah, if you want to go, we're going to go." So I wish... That's one thing about that buck. I wish I would have taken Taven with me. But I had him out the night before, and I knew, you know, with the new trail cams, I mean, I bought some of those cellular spy points that are, I mean, game changers, like when it comes to that. So it was, I just knew the wind was right, and I knew what time they were coming out, and I knew just everything was going to be perfect that evening. So I didn't want to, I just didn't want to complicate things. I just wanted to go out there for a sit, and you know what, everything worked out perfectly.
I remember getting the play-by-play from you, from your text me from the blind, and I was like, "No way!" Because I remember, man, at the start of when you first put up cams there, and it was like the second day we seen that buck on the cam, and you're like, "Oh, I want that buck!"
Oh, he was just a huge mature buck, like body-wise. Like, he was just on the downturn already, though. Like, but he was like, you could tell he was the... He was the guy in the area.
Yeah.
When he walked around, all the cameras you saw, like when he came into the picture, like everything else got out of his way. Like, they left him alone. So
you could tell that which buck it was just from like a far distance away, just based on body mass.
Oh, man, he was huge. He was a huge buck.
So that area that you put these cameras up behind your place, like, have you hunted that before? Like, what were some of the things that you're looking for before you put up your tree stands back there?
Well, this year, there's one field that kind of, I'm not going to give away where it is.
The fact that there was two monster bucks back there when we went and did the first scout.
Yeah. We go out, I'm like, I told Chase, I call him up, like, hey, I want to go set up some trail cams behind the house. Like, you want to come? He's like, yeah, I got some time. So we jump on the trike and go back there, and like, we're setting up one cam, and Chase is like, man, are those deer? And I'm like, I don't think so. Like, so we're setting up this cam, and then we look, and then they're running, and I'm like, oh, wow, they are. And they were big.
Yeah, they were nice.
They're like middle of the day. Yeah. But the main reason I set up there was because of, I mean, everyone knows about our fall. So, I mean, we had a horrible fall. So there was a lot of crop left out. So this field behind my house, it was, my neighbor has it, and he tilled it under, and he was replanting alfalfa in there. So he underseeded alfalfa with oats.
It's like cocaine for deer.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then so the oats was left because he couldn't get it off. And then there was another field that kind of bordered the main road, but that was all corn, and the corn was left. So like, really was kind of a paradise in the back where there was no pressure, none whatsoever. Nobody hunts around there. There's no pressure. And it was just, they had the food source there. They had and then they had a travel corridor that they had to walk. If they wanted to go to that cornfield, they had to walk right by me.
Yeah.
And it worked out. I mean, every night I sat there, I saw at least, I mean, we had trail cam picks. Like, there was like 14, 16 deer in that field at sometimes. Like, it's, it was crazy. Ridiculous. So.
And, I mean, that spot too, it has like some good bush around it too, so just like the perfect trifecta
and if you look around that area where it is, like within say a 3 mile radius, like that's really the biggest bush, so that really holds them. And you know, all the fields like that we're around is alfalfa or something like that.
You know what the crazy thing you were telling me about that area is, like, that one, we had a couple different trail cameras set up in that area, and like, there was bucks on some trail cameras that would not show up on the other trail cameras that we thought was getting all the deer.
And there was like, they were 600 yards apart.
Yeah.
Like, one was on one bush line, the other was on the other bush line. And I agree with you on that. I remember pulling that car, and I was like, where are these ones? Like, we never saw any, like, there was probably at least half a dozen on that one camera that we never saw once on the other camera. Not once.
Right.
It's pretty wild.
It's one of those things that you like learn about, right? Like, I know even the spots where we hunt, we don't run that many cameras, but the kind of the same idea. It's like, by the time September rolls around, and then you're like, oh, where the fuck did that buck come from? And then you get them on your camera like 10 times. Well, where was he in August? You know what I mean? And then the camera, like, on the same thing, like 400 or 500 yards away, get a picture of a couple other bucks, but they're not on the other camera, and it's not, you know, it seems like the same trail system, but yeah, they just got their own little ways of going and doing their business. It is crazy, as you would say, Chase.
Well, and I find you learn a lot more of that in like hunting archery, like rifle hunting. You're like, man, I can see 400 yards in every direction. Okay, this is a good spot to sit, and you sit down, and you don't really. Not that, I mean, people do spend time, but I don't think you really pattern and get, like, what's the word, intimate, you know?
Yeah.
Like, intimate with an animal. Like, I mean, like, that 5x5 I was going after, man, like, that was the one. And once I saw him, like, I didn't spend any time on the other stands. I was like, no, that's the one I want. And it was a bit of a moment, you know, when I got him and finally got him. I'm like, I remember calling you. I don't even know what I said to you. I was just so jacked up. I was just vibrating in the blind by myself.
Fucking got him, man.
And another crazy thing is, like, I watched him go down, and then, like, I walked over to my house and called my buddy up to come with me. So it was like 35, 40 minutes. And within that time frame, we went to go get him out of the field, and like, there was a coyote on him already.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the heck?
That's wild that there's that many deer around there and there's coyotes, like, chewing his ass off.
Towards the end, when we pulled those cameras, like, how many coyote pictures were I getting on those cameras? It was ridiculous. Yeah.
Fuck coyotes.
Oh, man. Yeah. They're going to get them behind the house, let me tell you.
Man, it's so crazy, though, that it's, like, in my mind, like, if I were to set up in one spot on that piece of property, like, where you set up the ground blind is where I would have set up and been like, I would have a shot at any deer coming through here eventually if I sat long enough. But from the evidence that the trail cameras show, there's deer that never even came past there. Wow. You know what I mean? Which is so crazy. Like if you knew there was a big buck on that property, and I mean, there's a chance in the rut that they'd come ripping through if he was on some does or something like that. But it's just crazy for me to think about, like that was the prime spot, I would think.
And then I mean, if we could have set up 500 yards, you know, behind the hay shed there. And I mean, that would have been another good spot because there was some rolling through there. I mean, it was,
But just to think that, like, how that separation happens like that between the bucks is crazy, and it's such a small area.
Let's, I want your guys' input on this one because the picture I took of my buck after I got it, because I mean, I called you, I told you when I, you knew when I shot it.
Yeah.
Was like the private messages I got online about people commenting on that. Like, you know, I had to get off some Facebook groups because I was just like, are you, like, I was just, the things I wanted to say, and I'm not one of those people that are like, instantly say what's on my mind. I just kind of read it and just take it all in and then like educated response. But I decided that it wasn't even worth the response half these people. But like, you know, they were commenting, oh, why is it so dark? Why are you taking pictures in a spotlight? I'm like, shut out last light. I didn't know if I hit it well. So I went home.
Yeah.
Came back. Yeah. And then, you have the other people that are commenting about, I didn't realize we could shoot a deer with a bow in muzzle season. I'm like, well,
we've had this conversation before too.
Yeah.
Eh?
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, it sucks, man. Like, it sucks. There's so many good, especially on Facebook, there's so many good, like, groups and stuff that, like, Manitoba deer hunting or whatever it is. But there's guys that, like, just, like, sit there and troll about it.
So, like, many keyboard warriors.
Anybody that's a hunter knows, like, even if you shot a deer with 20 minutes left, you don't go and run after it. Like, what are you going to do?
Unless you see that thing, like,
buckle, right?
Bang, flop on the ground. You're not.
Or watch it run. Exactly. Yeah. Like, and the thing is that really bothers me about those groups and stuff like that is that everyone has something to say. And, like, it doesn't matter if you're, I mean, whatever. Nobody knows the context of what happened. And, like, what are you supposed to do? Post a picture and then tell a story about exactly step by step what happened that night? Like, that. Like, what's the point?
So, and someone
it's not
else
like
was...
conservation's phoning you and be like, why is it dark out? Like, why are these guys? Yeah. Like, they're not fucking conservation.
And you know what the crazy thing is too? Like, you look through lots of those, the comments, and especially like some of the pictures that get a lot of action. And there'll be some guy like poking shit at somebody for something not even related.
Oh, I don't.
To the picture.
Where's your orange?
Yeah.
It's or like, come on, I took my orange off because it's better for the picture. Or whatever.
100%. You look at any of my photos, like, I find that tacky. I think you can get such a better photo with the animal and yourself than wearing blaze orange everything, you know? Yeah. So I always take mine off, always. Because, I mean, you want that memory. Like, I don't, you know, like, yeah, I just,
well,
like
and
you
the,
said.
And the stupid thing, too, is, like, even if you did shoot the deer, let's, like, say you shot a deer in rifle, you threw it in the back of your side-by-side, you drove it back to your house, you threw it up against the bush line because it's a better picture, you clearly don't have orange on, you might even have a t-shirt on, you take a picture of it, and then everyone's going to, like, troll you for it?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Give me a fucking break, man.
Well, that the buck I shot with my dad this year,
where was your orange hat, Chase?
I tried taking pictures out in the field, and I just couldn't get it lined up and focused properly. So we threw it in the back of the truck, drove it back to my place, and got it set up. And Jody came out and took pictures for us in front of the spruce tree. So in the headlights, so it looks like we're in the headlights. Looks like we're in the bush, but we're in. Right beside my deck.
Well, the thing is,
literally. So
I think, like, that's one of the problems with hunting nowadays. Like, is that whatever happened? I mean, I remember going hunting when I was a kid, and like that was the biggest thing for me. I remember going out with all my uncles and everyone. It was a big to do. Like, I remember when I shot my first deer. I wasn't with my uncles. I was with my dad. But I remember, like, my dad called my uncles, and, like, you know, it was like a whatever. It was a Wednesday night or something. I took the day off school and went hunting, and I remember, you know, within half an hour, there was like 20 people at my house.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think that that's one thing that nowadays is kind of gone to the wayside.
Yeah.
And I think that's hurting, you know, in general. Like, you know, like the fact that I invited you out to hunt this, you know, my archery property, like any other person would be like, why are you bringing them onto this property?
Oh, and I mean, know.
We did have someone say that, but let's, yeah. we're not going to go there. But I mean, like, why not? Like, why not share with people and enjoy the hunt? And I mean, you know, whether or not you got one or I got one or whatever, being part of that is just as much excitement for me as it is getting one personally.
Yeah. There's one thing that actually just happened not too long ago, and this might be kind of like off track or whatever, but we posted a post about Jay Siemens because we've had him on the podcast and we're just kind of reiterating the just that we had him on the podcast, and some guy messaged us and was like, oh, that guy sucks because he is telling everyone to go fish Lake Manitoba. And I was just like, what?
He's ruining all the good fishing spots or something like that.
And not only that, I'm not going to call him, I'm not going to say his name, but he's a guide in Manitoba. Why wouldn't you want a guy to be like, hey, come fish this lake. There's walleye here. You know what I mean? Like, anybody and everybody has, like, rules and regulations. Like, it's not like it's going to get overfished and overpopulated with fishermen. But it's like, if you're catching fish there, why not, why not embrace it and, like, get people out?
The thing is too, like,
it's the internet, man. It's totally fucked.
Yeah. The more
well, yeah,
the more people that want to go there too adds more value to that fishery or that environment or whatever it may be. Well, so like the more flex you have on it to regulate that pretty much.
Well, and how big is Lake Manitoba? Like it's huge.
Yeah.
And it's not like Jay Siemens is like, this is my GPS coordinates and we caught 68 walleye today. He never said that. He said, we're fishing on Lake Manitoba and we caught some walleye.
Yeah.
So who cares?
When we were out there, we seen like three other people. And they're like, there's probably a solid 2 miles of separation between everybody on the lake. It's insane.
But yeah, sorry for going on that tangent. No. But like, it's the same thing with deer hunting. It's just like, man, there's so many people that want to like shit on your parade. It's stupid.
Well, yeah. And then you get the comments about, oh, why'd you, you know, you should have let him grow a couple years. Well, at the end of the day, like maybe that guy's trophy is that's what he wanted to get and he set out to get, or like any deer is a trophy for the person. I mean, so to sit there and crap on somebody for like, you're not, you know, maybe you rag on that guy and that guy takes that to heart and then he just decides never to hunt again. Well, how is that helping anyone?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's like one thing, sorry to cut you off there, Chase, but there's like one thing with panoramic that I really have a lot of like pride in. It's like not necessarily having like a 160 class buck, but just like you harvested a deer. Like who cares if it's a doe or a spiker or whatever. Like, and yeah, we do post like a lot of guys that like had some great accomplishments in the fall time, but like at the end of the day, like it's everything. Like there's a thing to say, like you shouldn't be ragging on someone because they shot a spike buck or a doe. You should be like being proud of them and being like, hey man, you filled your freezer, man. You're doing exactly what we want to do, you mm-hmm. know. Promote the part of like being sustainable and like harvesting animals.
Yeah,
it's such a slippery slope.
I know. There's some areas I'm sure that it may affect the populations more than others in Manitoba, but Manitoba in general, I feel like it's unless you're trying to grow monster bucks in your areas, I think like harvesting a doe or a small buck I don't think it has a lot of effect on the populations, to be honest with you.
No, not at all. And
unless in those years where the populations are really low.
Yeah, but unless you have like sections and sections and sections of land, like unless you got this whole area locked down, how do you regulate that?
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Come rut, that buck, you might never see, you know, yeah, it might be in your area, but like, you know, what happens if he goes to property 10 over and a guy shoots him? Well, I don't understand it.
Yeah.
Unless you put a, you know, high fence, which I don't think there's anywhere in Manitoba that exists of that. Like how do you regulate that? And I think it's just, I remember when I brought you out and you made a comment, you're like, well, is there any rules? And I'm like, well, no, like shoot whatever you're comfortable shooting. You want to shoot a doe, by all means. If you want to shoot, you know, all I said was dry does, right? Like nothing with fawns. Because, you know, with the coyotes and stuff, you know, if you whack something early, chances of that fawn, I think, you know, that was the only thing, right?
Yeah.
So, I just don't, I don't know. I've never been a big, I mean, lately, the last few years where I've been fortunate enough to harvest moose and you know, hunt archery and get a couple of deer in the freezer early, I've been a little more picky on what I've been shooting at nowadays. But other than that, like growing up, like we were never, it was to fill the freezer.
Meat hunters, yeah. Same with us, man. Just hopping back to the social media side of things for a second. And I think like you guys raise a very good point there, and it's as outdoorsmen, I feel like the battle gets harder almost daily, and it's like everything in society is getting more and more separated, and these different groups are getting louder and fighting harder for what they believe in. So it's tough for me personally to see like people that are part of a hunting group that are tearing each other apart or being so critical of each other. And like, for instance, I think last season there was a 13-year-old girl in like Minnesota or something that shot this small elk mistakenly, thought it was a deer or something like that. And like people tore her apart, like she should be banned from hunting forever, this and that. And it's like, holy man, like give the girl a break. She made a mistake.
Didn't they let her keep it too or something? Like, didn't they report it and they ended up letting her keep it or something?
Yeah. The game warden obviously made his discretional call, and I don't think there was any fines on that or anything.
I think
like
they
that.
Let her keep it. If I remember reading that article, like don't quote me on it. Don't hit me up on social media about it. But but I want to say they I almost want to say that they let her keep it and there was nothing done about it. You want to ruin that, you know, that little girl that's passionate about hunting. You want to just tear her apart and then you never hunt it. And then the backlash from that, like what happens if that father or that parent or that relative or whatever decides like, well, we're done too then. Why are we going to do it, right?
People make mistakes. But I think in general on social media, I mean, it's hard to do because there will always be those people out there. But like as outdoorsmen, we need to do like a good job supporting each other. And there are lots of people that are doing that.
Yeah.
But there's always a few that are bad apples, right?
There's a couple things I want to say about that too, is just first of all about the social media thing, and Chase, you brought up a good point. It's like you go to those groups to like kind of be united. So even if you did, you know what I mean, shoot something that might look not right, like why, I don't get why you're on top of that guy about it. You know what I mean? Like, why are you shooting at night? Blah, blah, blah. Like you don't know the story, so shut up. But the second thing that I want to talk about is I can't remember now. I knew I was gonna do this too. Damn it. I don't know, maybe it'll come up later.
Okay, all right, we're just gonna keep rolling with this then.
Brain fart.
It was something good though. I had a really good thought.
I think at the start of this we were talking about Chris's fall. I think we pretty much got whitetail season wrapped up. You got a couple of deer in whitetail season.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to get whites. Well, I shot a doe.
I got my idea back.
Okay, get in there.
Can I tell it now?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's one thing to be said about, like we've all talked about it. I know even yourself, Chris, is like when we were younger and stuff, like we shot whatever, like we had to fill the freezer. But like even like to today's day, like even if like you take your kids out, I think that's something that you still got to like get ground, like grinded into their brain. It's like it doesn't matter what it is. You know what I mean?
Get them excited.
And I think there's like a lot of people out there, and I don't want to like poke at anyone in particular. But I think there's like people out there like that'll sit back and wait for that big buck with young kids. And I don't think that's the right way to do it. I think it's like there's a doe. Let's shoot that doe. You know what I mean? Like, and get that ingrained into their brain kind of idea.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, maybe that's just like my own thought, but like, I think about those conversations and the way you guys talk about it. And I was like brought up the same way. My old man was always just like, you know, a deer comes out and like shoot it and let's, you know, and the whole part of it was like to teach me how to gut it and skin it and process the meat and do all this stuff. And it was like a learning curve. And I just like hope that with social media and everything else, I hope it's not about like getting your kid that big buck or doing this or doing that. I just hope it's like the simple things again.
Oh man, I did that with Taven, you know, in the ground blind.
Yeah.
You know, we were sitting there and we had a bunch of deer in front of us and stuff like that. And Taven's like, oh, Dad, can we shoot that one? I said, nah, no, that's not really, You know what? Maybe I'll come back to this story after because where we were. I'll come back to this one. But yeah, so shot one early on. Got a doe in the freezer, you know, whatever. That's usually what I try to do, get one in the freezer and then take the pressure off. So, and then we went moose hunting and, you know, successful, got a really good bull. It was a great hunt as always. It was a fun hunt. And, you know, anytime you fly in and you're in the middle of nowhere with no cell service or no nothing, I mean, this year I bought a, what do you call it?
In reach.
Man, that's pretty sweet,
man.
You know, I'm texting my buddies back home. They're like, oh, hey, how's things, you know, how's the hunt going? I'm like,
I get a text from you like day one in moose camp. I'm like, is he not in moose camp right now? What is happening?
Well, you know, we used to rent a sat phone and, you know, the sat phone between rental and airtime and stuff. It was expensive. So, you know, I picked up one of these inReaches and it costs you, you know, to activate it for the month. It's like $70. You get unlimited texts and send and receive texts. You have a SOS. So like you can send an SOS if something happens, they will come and get you. Like it's a great piece. Like if you're doing a backcountry hunt where like you're in the middle of nowhere and, you know, to have something that is invaluable like that, you know, you hope to never have to use it, but you know, you don't want to not have it and need it. Right. So,
yeah. And really all you need is text message at the end of the day to check in unless there's some emergency going on.
Absolutely. And that's what we use it for. You know, when we get a moose, I shoot the message to my pilot. Hey, I got a moose. When you coming in? So he's like, oh, 2 o'clock, whenever. Okay. Well, we'll have everything packed up, ready to go. Like he doesn't just land me like, oh, now you're rushing to pack everything up. Right.
Yeah.
But, and then, yeah, like later on, so, you know, now I got a moose and a deer in the
freezer. Hang on a second. Yeah. You bought a new water filtration system for moose camp this year.
Yeah.
Do you remember what it was?
Let me check this out quick. So it's a base camp filter and it's a micro, it's a gravity filter. And I bought it at MEC.
MEC.
Mountain Equipment Co-op.
Because you were having troubles with the one you had before, right?
Yeah, it was a piece. It was good. It's good the first time, but the filter wasn't, you weren't able to back flush the filter. So, and taking river water and stuff, like, it just wouldn't work, like, after the first few times. So, so I ended up getting a new one. Sorry, just give me a second here. And this thing worked awesome. Like, I mean, I filled up a 5-gallon pail of water in, like, 10 minutes. And nice. You know, you put it in a big bag, you hang it up in a tree, and then you run the hose into a pail, and it's drinkable. Like, it's a, you know, it takes out 99.999% of everything, and it works great. So, I mean, now you're not carrying all that weight. Because when you're flying with a float plane, it's all weight. So, you're not carrying, you know, how many jugs of water. Oh, you got an unlimited amount of water, and it worked great. And then the nice thing about this filter was it was back flushable. But let me bring this up, water. Where were we?
Do you guys haul your own water into moose camp? What did we do there?
No. Yeah.
Or did we boil water? Can't remember.
No, we had water there, but we get those like big jugs that you put on top of your like office water type jugs.
Yeah.
That's what we have there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a MSR auto flow. So it's made by MSR. And it was pretty neat. Like it was just click, like it was, yeah. It's way better than the other one. We had a Katadyn before, and the one thing about this bag, it has a pre-filter, so it doesn't get, you don't get all that sediment into the filter.
Oh yeah.
So it had a pre-filter in the bag. Like the other one we had, the filter was actually in the bag, so it had all the sediment and everything will go into it. This one had a pre-filter in the bag, and then it had a hose that ran to the filter and then out of the filter into, so it pre-filtered though that sediment. But if you ever did find where the flow was, you know, slowed down, you just poured clean water into the bag, flipped the filter around, and then back flushed it.
Oh yeah.
And perfect. Then turned it back around and ran and it works.
And like how much water would you get out of that system?
The filters they say are good for let me just look, I have it right in front of me. It says in clear water 1500 liters, in turbid water 1000 to 1200. So I mean, you know, for a moose hunt in a couple weeks, you know, a week worth of moose hunting. I mean, we went, you know, I don't know, probably like 40 liters, 60 liters, something like that, you know?
Yeah. But so I mean, you're good for a few years on that thing.
Absolutely. As long as you clean it, you put it away, dry it out, and put it away properly, right? So,
was there much taste? Would it filter it really well?
It had that turbid look. When you ran it through that filter, it came out clear like it came out of your tap.
Nice.
It was... That filter worked way better than the other one I had.
That's pretty wild, hey?
And it's only like, it was $120.
Yeah,
you know, that's worth it. Like to have, like, and it packs up literally, you know, the size of two beer bottles beside each other. Like, that's how small it packs up in this little bag. So, like, and it weighs nothing.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So, after Moose Camp, you guys got drawn for elk.
Yeah, I came to the conclusion that I'm a pretty good deer and moose hunter, and I'm a pretty shitty elk hunter, because you know everyone made it seem like it was going to be pretty easy going out there, but it was it wasn't.
Yeah,
like they are a frustrating animal to hunt. Let me tell you, like just when you think you have them figured out, no.
Yeah.
And the other problem, like the other thing is too, is like there's so many of them, so you have all these eyes on you, and they're vocal, like. If one gets a little bit of a whiff or sees you, like they're chirping or the bull's bugling, and then they're all eyes on deck, right? Like,
right.
So it was. We didn't get one. We saw, and we had lots of chances, but the other problem is, I mean, we were in a whole new area, so we didn't have permission on a lot of land for the first couple days, which we ended up getting towards the end, and then you know, and like I said, it's all new property, so you got to do. You don't know. Scout. I mean, when you've hunted land, you know, your entire life, you have an idea where they're going to go or travel corridors or what it is. But, going into there blind it was tough. I mean, next time I get drawn, it'll be a different story, but
yeah,
for sure. You know, in 5 or 6 years, we'll give it another go. But, it was a blast, you know, to be able to, you know, you kind of take that little bit of break after deer season, and then all of a sudden you get to hunt another week in December right before Christmas. I mean, what more could a guy ask for?
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of like southern Manitoba, that draw?
Yeah, Turtle Mountains. So it was that area, what was that? I can't remember, but yeah, Turtle Mountains, south of Boisevain, kind of in that area. So a lot of farmland, and then when you start heading down south towards the park there, a lot of big bush. And
did you find like it was tough like getting permission down that area? Because I know this fall, maybe not there, but like in the Clarney Ninette area, like they had a lot of problem with poaching and people trespassing, etc., and there's like bull elk shot left on the road kind of thing. Like did you have any rumblings with that when you were down there?
You know, we were fortunate. My father-in-law used to haul hay to a lot of guys out there.
Right.
And, you know, for many years, you know, in the last 20, 30 years, well, whatever, a long time. So he knew a lot of names. So a lot of the people that we talked to and got permission, I mean, you just name drop that, oh, I know this guy, or, you know, I used to haul hay to this guy, or we got their phone number from a guy and said, hey, so-and-so told us to call you. And honestly, everybody we talked to, nobody said no. Everyone was saying, yeah, get rid of them type thing like that. But that being said, I think that had a lot to do with who we knew more so than some random guy giving them a shout, right? Like it was like, you know, we name dropped and it was, not a problem. Well, and then they were helping us out too. Like, I mean, every evening we get a phone call from 3-4 different guys saying, oh, hey, we saw elk over here, or hey, give this guy a call. I saw something somebody said that you might have on his property. So it was... But again, it was just, there was so much information coming in. We don't know the area. Like it was just, I think we were trying to going into a blind with, you know, both our hands tied behind our back type thing. So,
and that's the big thing to be said too, is like, just like doing exactly what you said, is like making phone calls, stopping in, seeing guys. And then usually
it's a lot of work making that plan and doing that stuff, right?
Well, like, yeah, but like what I'm getting at is like usually when you do your own work and like go and talk to people, make those phone calls, stop and see people, all that stuff, like people are more than happy to help you out. You know what I mean? But like if you're not gonna like go and get permission, you're gonna get shit on, you know?
Man, I always hate knocking on that door trying to get permission, but like 9 times out of 10 people are just like, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the trick now, Chase, now that we got our sons there, then we got to make sure we bring them with us. Now, you know.
Oh, yeah. I know, man. I'm looking forward to
taking my kid hunting.
Yeah.
I got Deck on the ice a couple times, and it was awesome, man. And he's
having a blast doing it. I had him out. I'm sure Taven's been with you cutting up animals and stuff, but I had Deck in the shop cutting up deer with me this year. He was loving it, man. He was cleaning stuff up and he was pointing at stuff. And you know, he's got a very limited vocabulary at the time, so there was a lot of dada and pointing at something kind of thing. So it was cool, man.
Oh man, you know, that's like that's the highlight of my everything this year with Taven, because last year he wasn't really too keen on it. Like I brought a couple deer home, I shot with a bow, and he didn't want to touch it, didn't want a picture with it, didn't want anything really to do with it. But this year now, man, like he's got that grip and grin figured out. Like, you know, I came home with my buck, I went and picked him up, came home with a buck, man. He was in there, okay, we got to take a picture. And then when I came home with a moose, same thing. Like, you know, so he has it figured out. And I mean, I had him in the blind that one night with me, and we had a bunch of deer in front of us, and he's like, well, can we shoot that one? I said, no, it's not the one I really want, but I mean, do you want to shoot it? And he made a point to bring his dart gun with him. So I'm like, do you want it? Get it? He's like, yeah, I want to shoot it. So I kind of, you know, propped him up on my knees so like he could see through the window of the blind, and you know, he fires his dart gun. I mean, didn't come close to this thing, but they kind of run off, and he says, oh, I'm sorry, daddy, I missed, but you know, we'll get him next time, he says. And, you know, fast forward 2 weeks, and this deer ended up getting hit on the highway by my house and ended up crawling into the bush and dying right by the house. So he ended up getting his deer. So we, you know, I cut the head off and we kept the horns from. So like now he tells everyone, you know, well then that he got a deer too. But man, you want to talk about someone that doesn't like coyotes, because the coyotes came and, you know, because he's like, oh, can we cut up the deer? And I said, ah, Taven, the coyotes kind of got to it already. We can't. And man, you ask him now, he's like, and you ask him like, oh, what do you think about coyotes? He's like, oh, I hate coyotes. He's like, they eat our deer, he says. But he's so funny. One more story about David, because he's so funny. When I picked him up to go pick up my last deer I shot, because again, I shot it behind the house. He comes up and we're looking, and he's like, oh man, that's a big fat deer, dad. That's a good one. He's like, that's going to make a lot of deer sausage. and then he's like, you smell that, dad? I'm like, you know, like, I don't know. I'm like, no, what is that? He's like, smells like deer meat, he says. I'm like, oh man, yeah, that's my boy.
Proud dad moments.
I had a buddy of mine, he was deer hunting and he took his little one with him. And it's funny because it was my buddy and his dad, and then the grandkid, right? So they're all sitting in a blind, and my buddy was taking a video, and there's a couple deer, like does and whatever, standing in front of the blind, and the grandfather was like, okay, he's like, take your time. And he has this little, like, dart gun out the window. He's like, take your time, take a good breath. And you can see the kid, like, just concentrating, and then took. And this little light dart falls out of the blind. But it's, like, priceless, and he thought he was right in with the boys, you know, like four or five years old, or 3 or 4 years old.
Get him excited. That's
classic,
about it.
Man. Like I love that shit.
That kid's hooked, you know, like there's no doubt in my mind. Like when he is old enough, that kid will be like glued to me. Like I won't be able to hunt without him with me. Like it's going to happen. And I love that.
Yeah, even when we went scouting with him behind your place there, and he had the two dart guns, and this one's for you, dad, and this one's for me. And hopefully we see something. And it's,
oh man, and those were his trail cams. He had to come with me because those are his cameras. That kid's got a passion for hunting now. He's hooked. He and he's so proud. He tells everybody all the time.
When I had this conversation with Tristan before about you know, just like what is it that got us so hooked into this, and like because. I mean, I'll support my kid in anything that he wants or decides to do, but I hope the hell he enjoys the outdoors as much as I do. And I'd love to spend, more than love to spend, like, lots of time with him doing it. So I'm trying to think in my mind, how do I facilitate that? And so Tristan and I were having this conversation. He's like, just the energy you have around that activity or whatever it is, like dad was always pumped up to go hunting, and like sometimes he went without us because it was the boys thing and he's going moose hunting or whatever, and we're young, can't go with them, even deer hunting, that kind of thing. And the anticipation he had, and you know, he's always having fun going hunting and stuff like that, and there's always lots of excitement when he brought an animal home, and and all that. So, you know, just got to keep that in mind.
It's such a good question, like, to ask anybody. And it's the same thing, like, just like you said, it's like, I remember my old man used to go out hunting and he was in a good mood. So it's like, man, that must be fun.
Yeah.
You're in a good mood, finally. You don't see.
Well, in the mornings when they're leaving, they look happy. They weren't always happy when they came home. Yeah, but, exactly. You know, they were always happy when they left, you know?
Well, and then when you finally get to go with them and stuff like that, they're like, it's a good day. And then they get you pumped up over a deer or a chicken or anything, right?
Yeah. And, like, that's the same thing. Like, I mentioned it actually in our very first podcast. Is like the first time I ever got to go out to this fishing camp. And I caught this fish, and everyone, like my dad and my uncle, were just like, oh my God, like, that, oh, look at this fish. Like, just, it got me super pumped up. And the other thing that, like, really got, I think got me into hunting was, like, it was like my old man would be like, all right, well, I'm going hunting. Like, I'll see you when I get home. And I'd wait for him to get home and then be like, hey man, what'd you get? And, like, I was supposed to be in bed, you know, and I'd sneak out and go to the door. Like, hey man, what'd you get? And then he, you know, if he actually did get a deer, he'd be like, sharpen your knives, let's go. You know, like, you knew I wasn't going to go out there and actually cut the deer up, but I was going out there and, like, dressed up, go out there and watch them do it. And yeah, it's just the way they make that atmosphere so good for you.
Yeah.
But
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's next on the agenda, boys?
What else have we got?
So you did a lot of deer hunting, elk hunting, moose hunting this year. Are you much, like, do you hunt birds at all?
You know what? None of my friends or family really did it. So it's one of those things. It's not that I would love to go. I know Chase invited me once, but again, it was like last minute. And it's like, hey, we're going Sunday. And it was like Friday night.
Yeah.
He's that guy, you know?
That dude, that's seriously how we plan.
No, that's how you plan. Don't put me in that category.
Not you, but me. Like, that's how I hunt. And it's like, because, like, the thing is, too, like, Tyler has the hunting rig for hitting the marsh. And one of our buddies has our layout blinds, and we gave him a bunch of our decoys. Because, like, I know if I'm going goose hunting in the field, it's going to be with him. And if we're going duck hunting in the marsh, it's going to be with Tyler. Because Tyler's got the setup. He's single and he's makes good money and he knows what he enjoys doing. And he sure as hell can find the ducks and can kill the ducks. So it's like,
yeah.
And he's, I don't know, we just always have always hunted with him. So it's like, and then he always does a Friday, okay, we're going, who's hunting this weekend kind of thing, you know? Yeah. We got room or whatever. Sometimes you bring his brother, his dad, or that. But, yeah, we just always hunted together. So it's...
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've gone and we shot birds and stuff like that. But it's just something that I never... Just something that, you know, we never really did. So it's one of those things. Like, I mean, I had dirt bikes and other stuff. So we ripped around with that stuff. I mean... But, I mean, you should talk to our buddy Ed there if you want some good farmland to hunt geese.
Oh, man, you're telling me about that this year. It's like, you got to be kidding me.
He had a couple of well-known migratory game bird hunters that were beating down his door trying to get permission, and that was a hard no on his end. But I mean, we could get in there pretty easily.
Man, you could make that argument with any aspect of life, to be honest with you, about it, and it doesn't matter what you do. Is like the company you keep is the stuff that you do,
mm-hmm.
pretty much, right?
Like interests, right?
Yeah. Like-minded folks, like-minded interests, do like-minded stuff.
Yep.
Right.
That's right. Well, right on. What are we at time?
About an hour.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. What do you got? So you're doing some 3D shoots coming up here.
Yeah, I want to get back into the bow talk quick before we drop this.
All right. Where are we at? I'm going to bring you guys a 3D shooting. Yeah. Yeah.
I want to go 3D shooting bad. I do. I'll probably suck at it.
Nah.
You know what? You know what happened to me when I bought my new bow? I was sighting it in and I must have fucked up the sight some fierce on my last bow. And the sight's, it's like 12 years old, 10 or 12 years old. Just as old as my old bow was. And I went to move them. And the pins are all stripped out. So I just took nail polished them on there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's holding tight for now.
I got a sight for you.
Not, God.
Speaking of sights,
okay.
I got stuff for you.
This every time I have a conversation with you about something, like Chris is the guy that either has a guy or has a thing or knows a guy that knows a guy that has a guy. And it's like I do not spend a day with you that you're like, oh, I got a guy for that.
He's like the guy off Pawn Stars.
Oh,
when he's crazy. Like, oh man, I got a guy.
Yeah,
I got a guy that knows something about rifles.
It's always
call him in.
Always something. And then, like, I was at your place the one day, and Lindsay's like, he's always got a guy.
He's got a guy. You know what?
She used to rag on me about, like, doing favors for people and helping old people. And because I was that, I still am that guy. Like, somebody calls me up, and I'll be like, man, I'll drop whatever I'm doing, go and give him a hand. And she's always like, wow, why do you always do that? I'm like, man, one day it'll come around. You know, you hope it comes around, but that's always a person I've always been. Like,
yeah.
You know, but. You know, there's been a lot of times that, you know, that guy that owed me a favor, it paid off for her. So,
yeah.
You know, but, no, I have, I just upgraded all my stuff. So, I mean, I have,
yeah,
I have
we were talking earlier about your 3D setup here.
Yeah.
And.
Well, first of all, does your like target shooting setup differ from when you hunt or. Oh, is it like you
completely
it is, eh? Well, see, like in my mind, like I'd think like if I went to go and do a 3D shoot or whatever shoot it was, I'd be set up for my hunting so that I would be improving. But when you get into kind of like two different areas, obviously you need different setups. Like, can you maybe go through that a bit?
Well, I mean, when I used to compete, you know, way back when, again, aging myself, but way back when, I don't even think they have the class anymore. Like, but there used to be a class. It was called like Hunter class, and it was a fixed pin sight, and you were only allowed like an 11-inch stabilizer.
Okay, I'm not gonna like interrupt you, but fixed pin means,
it was a multi pin sight that were fixed. They weren't adjustable, so you couldn't adjust the pin. Like, say if it was a 20, like you had more than one pin, so you had your 20-yard pin, 30-yard pin, 40-yard pin, 50-yard pin. Because we used to shoot out to 50 yards. I mean, just they still do, but that class. But nowadays, I mean, back then there wasn't too many slider sights or like single pin adjustables. It was pretty well like fixed pin is what you shot, you know, aside from target sights or pendulum sights.
Yeah. So those people that don't really know too much about archery, like the adjustable sights, you can actually dial them in for the specific yardage that you want to shoot.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's a single pin with a micro adjust dial. So like if it's, you know, you range it at 35 yards, you turn that dial till like the mark on the sight says 35 yards, you aim with that one pin and away you go. So
right.
And that's the class I'm going to be shooting now. It's like they call it an open class. So I mean it's very target specific. Everything on the bow now that it's set up. Like I took off all my hunting stuff, my sight, my stabilizers, my rest, like everything's strictly target. So it's, you know, a long stabilizer, like a sidebar, target, adjustable target sight. And even my release I'm using, you know, it's a full back tension. I don't use a back tension shooting. Cause I find like shooting from a tree stand or from a ground blind, like your form is not, you know, you're not standing perfectly proper or nothing. So, I mean, I found, I've practiced shooting back tension out of a blind, but
okay. Yeah. Before you get too far, I'm gonna interrupt you a million times. Sorry. Here in the next next little while. But so the long stabilizer, what's the benefit to that?
The whole concept of a stabilizer is putting weight on your bow to that. It's like weight on a gun. Do you find like a rifle, like a ultralight rifle shooting freehand is probably a little, you know, wavy and stuff like that. Now you put a heavier rifle, so it's, you know, your muscles are working
more. Yeah, you get that muscle engagement, right?
Exactly. You know, it's like when they say when you're shooting with you know, you're supposed to load a bipod or something like that, you're essentially doing that with your, you know, when mm-hmm. you're putting a long stabilizer and you're putting that weight out there, so it tends to, you know, balance your bow. It brings your sight picture, you know. So
is that balancing your bow like up and down or like
everything? It's not like ideally you don't want it perfectly, you know, a weight distribution. Like you want it to tilt forward on you when you, you know, at the release of the shot and stuff like that. So it's really just, it's to steady your bow and make it just a little more, you know, a little more stable
right.
is the word. Yeah.
You also have a couple stabilizers coming off, going backwards, right?
Yeah. So, like on your target sites, you have a, you know, I mean, all the target sites are precision, right? So, I mean, you would assume that that bubble level that's in that. So, a lot of times, like, you want to, I mean, if you don't have a bubble level in your sight, you don't see it. But, like, when you come to draw with that bubble level, you'll see if you're canting your bow left or right. And that cant at longer distances, like, if you're, you know, if your bow's, you're leaning your bow to the left or the right, at longer distances, that's going to make your point of impact from where your pin is, you know, left or right. So, those are, you know, at draw that you're not trying to fight. It's to level that out. Like, so they, when you're at draw, it brings that, you know, just, again, it's for stability. And so, like, when you're at...
Just draw, helps you keep it a little more level.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. So I didn't know that.
Yeah, so not to, like, keep on interrupting you, and you can keep on telling your story, but the next thing I want to talk about was their draw, back pressure...
Back tension release.
Back tension release. What's that about?
So, it's a... It's a adjustable springs in it, essentially, and it goes by weight. So it's holding weight. So you adjust it, and then there's a safety. So when you're drawing, you hold the safety, you come to full draw, you let go of the release, and then you start pulling. So if people don't know what back tension is, essentially you're not supposed to just hold it and jab a trigger. Like, you're supposed to pull through your shot. You're supposed to tense your back muscles. You're supposed to pull against the back wall. And with a back tension, it just goes off. Like, you don't, I mean, you have, through muscle memory, you have a pretty good idea when it's going to go off, but it's that surprise release that makes for a cleaner shot release, more accurate. So,
right.
So you're not anticipating where the pin's going and just jabbing it, right? And then, you know, it's just like a rifle, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not, you know, you're, as soon as that crosshair comes on the animal, you don't just pull the trigger. You're supposed to steady it and then, you know, squeeze. So it's the same concept, only that you're not controlling the release.
Okay, so you're doing that. You adjust it to the poundage of your bow. So essentially you'd be at your full draw before it
releases. So the release, the holding weight of your bow. So you adjust it to that. So
okay.
A lot of the bows have like 80% let off. So you're only holding, to make math easy, because, so whatever, like if it's a 100-pound bow, you're only holding, you know, 20 pounds, right? With the, but I mean, it's less than that. So like that release is set at, say, if your holding weight's 7 pounds, so then it's set higher than that. So when you're pulling through, you're going to pull through that holding weight.
How much higher would you have the release set? Was it like a half pound or like pound or
personal?
Generally?
I couldn't even tell you what I have it set at.
Just,
I
mean, whatever
it
just kind of feels.
Yeah. I mean, some people like it that it's just instant, and as soon as you start pulling, it goes off. Other people like, but I mean, that the problem with that though is like, if it is instant or anything, I mean, it takes discipline. Cause if you ever, I mean, bows, when you set up with a short valley, like if you just, you know, you get list sloppy and you slide forward and then comes out of that valley, like where you're released, and then it'll just go off. Cause all of a sudden it hits higher weights. So it's, I mean, it's a learning curve for sure. It's not a beginner thing.
So basically that is basically teaching you to draw a bow perfectly.
Proper form. 100%. Like it's those. Yeah. You have to proper form. There's ways to cheat it, but I mean, we're not going to go into that, but it's like, once you learn with that, it really ingrains the whole proper routine of shooting, you know, and then you incorporate that into your, you know, your thumb release or whatever you shoot for hunting, you know, proper form.
Repetition. You're also telling us about the scope you got for your sight.
Oh man.
What is that? You're putting scopes on bows now?
Yeah,
is that what people are doing?
I mean, I never shot open class before, but I mean, the target sights they have nowadays, I mean, they have single fixed pin with, you know, you can put magnified lenses in. They have clarifiers in the peep. Like, it's just, I mean, you could, I mean, I'm probably not the guy to talk about all that stuff with, because I talked to Alan I used to work at Heartland, but he doesn't anymore. But Alan's like the guy, you know, he's been on a few other podcasts with other people, but that guy's been target shooting 3D everything for...
What's Alan's last name? We drop that on here.
I don't know. Should we? I don't know if I want to. You know Alan, don't you?
I don't think I've ever met Alan.
Oh, it's Alan Gunter. Yeah. He was the, if anyone knows Heartland Archery, everyone knows who Alan was. So, yeah, he's the guy I've been, you know, putting a lot of time into talking to about making this next step into open class and, you know, all the scope and magnifying and, you know, fixed, you know, pin rather than dot and everything else. And it's neat. I mean, it's definitely a next step, but I mean, the amount of money you can spend is mind-boggling, really, when you start looking at what some of this stuff is worth.
That's one thing about archery, man, and I mean, lots of things in the outdoors now. We're talking about this the other day about ice fishing, even. It's just how much you can trick out what's the other word I'm looking for? But just the amount of money you can spend and try other stuff out and.
But you don't have to. No, you don't. You know, to get in the 3D, yeah. I mean, like, you know, we're talking about this, but like what I'm doing is, you know, like the you know, will be the top class, right? Like it'll be like the pro group of people doing it. So like, I mean, I'm not saying you need to do that to be competitive in 3D. I mean, there's different classes. I mean, they have classes now that, you know, like you can shoot your hunting setup. And I mean, and you can be competitive within that class. So like, they're not going to put you against these, you know, these guys that have the every bell class, and whistle. Yeah.
So what you're saying is like they wouldn't put me against you.
No. I mean, we can shoot and I'll just spot you like 20 points or something and go for a case of beer or something, but
yeah, probably not.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a class for everyone. So like if I don't want people to think that, you know, if you want to go out there and shoot 3D that you need to have this set up. I mean, you can get out there with your hunting bow and go out there and have fun and shoot the course and you know.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. But there's always, yeah. I feel like that's a slippery slope though, man, once you get involved in that. And then it's like, oh man, I need to get that.
I blew the budget for 2020 already. Let's just say that.
Did you see that guy with the panorama hat? Man, I need to get one of them hats.
That'll be the cheapest part of the setup. I guarantee you that. Yeah.
Well, you guys just have to bring a box full of gear there, mate. You probably make a killing.
Yeah. I think I've seen one of our hats in a picture from the Brandon
shoot. Yeah, I zoomed in lots, and I was trying to figure out if it was. It looked like ours, but I don't know for sure. But
I saw it was at Cabela's just after New Year's returning. Well, not returning, but getting like a something that I got for Christmas. I ended up going on sale for Boxing Day, so I went and got, you know, it went 50% off, so I went and got the difference back in a gift card. So, because I'm cheap like that, but I saw some of your gear was running around Cabela's. I was gonna go up to people and be like, hey, do you know anyone? Like, where'd you get that from? But I was like, nah, better not.
I like that. I like hearing those stories. Donation
bin.
Yeah,
a lost and found.
Lost and found at Cabela's.
But whatever, I'll take it. Well, right on. It's been a good hour. I'd hate to like cut this short, but.
I think I had something else I wanted to say. I can't remember now.
You always have something else you want to say.
Yeah.
The old Lockport story?
It could get Lockport.
So then I tied up my boot, and then I was walking out. So anyways, it was great to have you out, man. Like earlier in the podcast, you know, short notice invites, but finally we got you out. I finally get to see you without being...
At the Tundra or the Legion or where else?
Every time we see each other. But thanks for coming out, man. It's a good talk. Like, I like to talk to guys that have some experience in bow hunting. That's one thing that I have a pretty big passion about. So get to ask some questions and thanks for coming, man.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. It's been a blast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right on.
Well, we hope you enjoyed listening to that podcast as much as we enjoyed making it with Chris. Chris is an amazing guy. He's I mean, been a helping hand over this past hunting season. Like, I don't know, just sometimes it's tough to find a guy that'll help out like that. So it's can't speak highly enough about him. Just a great guy. Loves the outdoors. Looking forward to many more adventures with him and hopefully some more podcasts coming up. Just a reminder, in case you guys forgot, April 4th and 5th, Parkland Outdoor Show and Expo in Yorkton, Saskatchewan. Get your tickets at parklandoutdoorshow.com. we're going to be there. We have a booth set up, and we got some pretty cool plans for the show. So come check us out there. We'll have some of our gear with us, and we certainly want to meet everybody. So if you guys are want to come by and check us out, have a conversation, absolutely do so. And February 23rd, come check us out on Lake Winnipeg. This is your official invite to stay up to date. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram. Message us on there if you want more details. But we're going to be on the ice doing some cooking, some fishing, and hopefully some podcasting. So come join us. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll catch you next time. Keep your lines tight and keep your powder dry. Shoot straight.